For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Yes. All right. So we are up to our next part of the story. So let's just structurally where we're up to. So we are in the third episode of Yaakov and Esav. We're up to the episode in which they actually meet up in Parshas Vayishlach. This third episode is divided into two episodes, two parts. The first part is in which Yaakov sends the messengers to Esav to tell him that he's coming home, and then he prepares for war, he prepares with gifts, he prepares with tefillah, and then he prepares, in preparing his camp, he crosses over the river, he ends up by himself, he has that whole wrestling match with the angel. That's the end of part one of this episode, which we concluded last week with the writings of Rav Hirsch. And now, after the battle with the angel, he actually meets up with Esav. That's what we're going to do now. We'll conclude this last episode with our regular structure. We're going to go through first just the verses, raising all the questions that we have. Then we'll do Rashi, we'll do the Ramban, we'll do Rav Hirsch, and then we'll see where we're up to as far as the calendar year goes by the time we finish that, as we conclude these episodes with Yaakov and with Esav. Okay, so let us begin. So today is going to be, we're up to the pink sheets. If you remember when I gave you originally the handout, I color-coded it so we could subdivide these two episodes, and we are now up to the second side, which begins at Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33. Today is questions. Today we're going to go through the verses, and we're going to raise all the questions that we have. Hopefully we'll get through the entire story, at least just in the verses, and then we'll be able to begin with Rashi next week. Here we go, ready? Yaakov lifted up his eyes. Again, we're coming literally right off of the verse in which Yaakov is told, if you just look on the other side, the end of the white sheet, in which Yaakov named the place Peniel, where he had wrestled with the angel. And the sun rose for him when he passed Penuel, and he was limping on his thigh because that's where he had been wounded. And therefore the Torah said, the children of Israel may not eat of this displaced tendon. And now we continue with our story. Yaakov, after that episode, he lifts up his eyes in our verse, chapter 1, Pasuk Aleph, Vayar, and he saw, Vihine Esav ba, and Esav is coming, Vimo arba meos ish, and with him indeed were still the 400 men that he had heard about when the angel originally returned and told him, I saw Esav, I delivered your message, and he's coming to meet you with the 400 men. Here they are. Vayachatz es hayiladim al Leo vi al Rochel vi al shtei hashifachos. So he divided the children with Leah and with Rachel and with the two maidservants. Comments, questions?
Repeating him.
Yeah, where's it? How's he repeating himself?
By dividing them again.
Okay, so I was going to say, we're going to have to go back over the logistics of what happened because we seem to have been divided already.
Right.
Right, so to see how exactly this is working, if you flip back to the beginning of our story in the first of your white pages, so on chapter 8, verse 8 on the second page, it says, Yaakov became very frightened and was distressed, so he divided the people who were with him and the flocks and the cattle and the camels into two camps. So already in verse 8, in the very beginning, it sounds like he divided up into two camps. And he says, if Esav comes to one camp and strikes it down, the remaining camp will escape. And then the verse continues. And then if you look even at verse 22 and 23, continuing on, the gift passed on before him, and he lodged that night in the camp, and he rose during the night, and he took his two wives and his two maidservants and his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Yabok. So, just logistically, what did he do? He divided it already in verse 8. Then he crosses everybody over in verse 23. The implication is all together. It could have been that he divided, and they were still into their divisions. But the implication is he crossed everybody over. He's left alone. And now we get to verse 1 in chapter 33. And again, he's dividing. And now we have additional information about how he's dividing. He's dividing it, the children with Leah and with Rachel and with the two maidservants. It sounds like each wife gets her children. So we'll have to look into just the logistics of the division, how it's taking place. But be that as it may, what we have right now is he's dividing up his camp based on the wife, based on the mother of the children gets the children. Yeah.
Why do you think Rachel mentioned first?
Okay, Leah is mentioned first, and then Rachel. Rachel, we of course know, was the wife of his choice, so to speak. But whom did he marry first?
Right.
He actually married Leah first, and he has more children with her. So it's interesting that she is put first. You know, we could have almost asked that either way. You know, if the Torah would have mentioned Rachel first, we would have said, but he married Leah first. Torah put Leah first, we could ask why he married Rachel first. So let's just note, what the Torah does is it does put Leah first. Leah was indeed the first woman that he married. He has the most children with her. And she goes first, even though Rachel was his beloved wife. And we will, of course, when we get to Rashi, we will see certain comments about the order of the wives. That will certainly play them, and we'll get to that when we get to it. Yeah.
It's also not clear whether the two maidservants were together with all their children or whether they were divided into two separate.
Right. So were there like four camps or the two
right.
camps?
Or three camps, it would be, the way I'm saying, is a possibility.
I mean, it might have been
Leah, Rachel, and then the others.
Okay. So a little bit of ambiguity as to, like,
name.
How the camps were.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Fine. So the pasuk tells us he lifts up his eyes and he sees Esav is coming with his 400 men. Verse 2, pasuk beis vayosem. Yeah?
Another question. The lifting up his eyes.
Good. We've seen that before.
Yes.
Yes, excellent. Where have we seen that before? That's a phrase that comes up in a number of other places. Vayisa Yaakov Einav, or Vayisa Avram Einav Vayar. There's that phrase. It's a phrase that comes up in various instances in which this idea of lifting up one's eyes and behold, this is what is coming. Okay, very good. Vayosem es hashifachos v'es yaldehem rishona. He placed the maidservants and their children first. V'yas Leah v'iladeha acharonim, and Leah and her children after. V'yas Rachel v'yas Yosef acharonim, and Rachel and Yosef last. So this is certainly evidence for what Dean had suggested a moment ago, that maybe there were three camps. It was that of Leah, that of Rachel, and then the two maidservants together. Could be, maybe there were four. Unclear, but what we have here, now we have an order. So in verse 1, we have the division into each camp gets a mother with her children. And now we have the order in which they're presented. First, you have the maidservants with their children. Then you have Leah and her children. And Rachel and her Yosef. Rachel only has one child at this time. Binyamin has not yet been born. Binyamin will be born when they arrive on the way into Beis Lechem. So it's only Yosef. So Rachel and her Yosef, they are last. Questions, comments?
Why that order?
Okay, why that order? Let's answer that ourselves. What's the simplest as we just read through it? What does that order imply?
If he was going to be attacked, he wants Yosef to live the most.
Right, you know, you put your most prized possession in the back. This would touch on what you had commented in verse 1. Verse 1, Leah is mentioned first,
mm-hmm.
then Rachel, then the servants. And now when he divides them, which clearly seems to be showing his hand as to what he views as his most prized possession, which would be Yosef, then Rachel, then the children of Leah and Leah, we have the order as it's presented over here. Certainly an interesting thing. So, okay, so we have him dividing up the order and the placement in order to protect, and it seems again that Rachel and Yosef are his, that which he's looking to protect the most.
If he had already put them on the other side of the river, why are they with him and approaching Esau?
Well, what had happened is he was left alone on the other side, and apparently after that battle, that's what the last two or three verses read, that he names the place, and then the sun rises, and he, you know, continues on. That's what it sounds like, what's going on in our story.
Okay.
3, V'hu avar lifneihem, and then he went ahead of them, Vayishtachu arza sheva pa'amim ad gishto ad ochiv. And he prostrates himself, he bows down to the ground 7 times until he came close to his brothers. The Torah describes the camps are divided in their order, maidservants Leah, then Rachel and her son Yosef. Yaakov then goes ahead of them, and he bows as he's walking towards Esav, so that he prostrates himself 7 times on the way to actually meeting him until they've actually now come face to face. Comments, questions?
Well, the question would be why 7 times?
Okay, right, we're going to deal with it. Was that a random number chosen? Why 7?
Then I have a question for you because I'm not exactly sure. When it says prostrated himself, Does that mean he knelt on the ground and went down like on Yom Kippur, or he just bowed toward the ground? What does it
mean? I don't, it's a good question. Exactly how we would, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know exactly if that's a reference in this context of actually, I'm guessing it means actually on the ground. I think we'll see in Rashi, although I'm not there to look it up, but we'll see them when we get there exactly. How much the hishtachlo? It's a fair question. We'll see exactly what that is. So we have Yaakov. How would we, if we had to explain why is Yaakov doing that?
To make his brother feel good.
Right? The simplest textual explanation would be a sign of humility. That as he's approaching his brother Esav, on the simplest level, he is simply displaying his humility in, I come in peace and not to make war. I am an unarmed family man with my four wives and 11 children. That's on the simplest level, the bowing down would simply be humility and sign of peace, right?
Well, don't you only bow to Hashem?
So we will have to see, there are other deeper reasons that we will see as far as what was being accomplished with this bowing down, but as far as...
I don't think so.
No, there's no, if it's not for an idolatrous practice, I don't know, you know, just the sense. It seems like the prostrating, the bowing down was much more of a pretty common sign of humility rather than a form of idolatry or worship. Yeah.
In my mind, I question how we could really call it humility if he was doing it for the purpose of making his brother think that he was humble.
Yeah, as a sign of humility.
Yeah, but he inside.
Right, as a sign of humility I'm happy to clarify that, as a sign of humility, and as I was saying, I come in peace and not to make war. Like, I am, you know, subject to you. Now, I remind you of the way that Rav Hirsch described what we just saw last week. The fact that the angel representing Esav maims and damages Yaakov was the sign of the subject. You will always be weaker throughout history. You will be hosts in Esav types of land. They will never be able to destroy you, but you remain steadfast in your belief in me, and you will be fine. So we have all that now playing itself out, in which he, if you look at it, you would see Yaakov subjugating himself before his brother Esav. Okay, let's continue on. You have a question?
Well, it sounds like Yaakov lost the battle, but I thought he actually won the battle.
So he loses the battle at night, and then at daybreak becomes the stronger. But during the period of night, he is the one who gets hurt. He is the one who is overpowered. He cannot be overpowered to this point of total submission and being uprooted from the earth. But he loses the battle in the sense of he's the weaker of the two.
Was he approaching Esav feeling good about having...
I don't know. We could ask it as a question, but I don't, from the text itself here, I don't know yet. All we see are the... In other words, we see... let's say like this, what's missing here in the Torah, what's missing, I don't mean missing like it's wrong, I'm saying what the Torah does not tell us about, I'm still not saying what I want to say, let's avoid that, I'll get back to it. When you flip back to your white pages, what's Yaakov's response when he first hears the angel in verse 7? The angel says, we came to your brother to Esav and he's coming towards you, and 400 men are with him. What is Yaakov's response in verse 8?
Frightened and distressed.
Correct. Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. He becomes exceedingly frightened and distressed. And he divides the camp into two. So that we're told his emotional state when he hears the news that his brother is coming. Mm-hmm. So I'm picking up on your comment and saying, what does the Torah not say here when he actually confronts him, even though he also is now dividing up his camp?
Right.
We don't find any fear. Now, I'm not ready to say yet, therefore he wasn't, but what I will say is in reference to your comment, he just went through this battle and he held his own. The angel of Esav tried to destroy him and he held his own. Maimed, but with the sense that when daybreak comes, I become the stronger of the two. I will make it through and survive and actually have the upper hand eventually. And coming right out of that, we have the approach. We have the dividing of the camp, so he's still preparing for war. He's still coming with humility. I come in peace. I don't want war. But we do not have a description of his fear. take it for what it's worth. I don't know what to make of it just yet, but just pointing that out. So far, so good? Verse 4, Pasuk Dalet, Vayoratz Esav Lekros. So what's Esav's response? You know, again, we read through this like we know the story already, but technically speaking, at this point, if we were writing a script of a play or filming a movie, this would be the moment of drama, in which it would be like in this close-up, and the music would be in the background, and Yaakov is bowing down, and Esav's approaching with his 400 men of war, and, you know, what is his response going to be? Is it going to be one of a slaughter? Is it going to be one of an attack? How does he respond to all of this? So the drama plays itself out. Vayoratz Esav lekroso vayichabkehu. Esav runs towards him and embraces him, hugs him. Vayipol al tzavarov, and falls on his neck. Vayishakehu vayibku, and kisses him, and they cry. Comments, questions.
Who fell on whose neck?
Okay, excellent. Who do you think?
Esav on Yaakov.
The simple reading, I would start there. Your question's a fine one. I would start there because, you know, in general grammar, your default is always take your object, take your subject, and, you know, your noun and your verb and run it through the pasuk. So, Vayoratz Esav likraso, Esav ran to greet him. Vayichabkehu, and he hugged him or embraced him. Vayipol al tzavarav, should be, in the simple default reading of the pasuk, Esav fell on Yaakov's neck. Vayishakehu, and he kissed him. Vayivku, and they wept. That would be the simple reading, and I would agree with you that if we were to find an alternate reading, a medrash somewhere that read it the other way, we could read it into the pasuk, but I think the starting point would be that Esav is the one doing the actions, except for the last line. The last word is plural. They wept. What we have here, as far as our moment of reunion, so to speak, let's say without any Rashi, without any comments from the sages, we're simply reading the text. Would we read this text that Esav's reunion was a happy one, a peaceful one? How would we define just the words that we're given as far as this reunion?
It was peaceful. At that moment.
Peaceful and happy. Why are they crying?
Yeah, it looks like Esav was glad to see his brother.
We would, if we, again, just reading the text, we would say it sounds like Esav has made peace with Yaakov. He runs to greet him, hugs him, falls on his neck and kisses him, and they cry. Why would we think that why does Yaakov wait all the way to the end to be part of this as far as crying?
He's glad he's not being killed.
Right? Could be he was, on a simple level again, just reading through the text, could be he was waiting to see, like, what he didn't know what he was going to get. And when he sees Esav's response of running, hugging him, falling on his neck, and kissing him, and then crying, Yaakov joins in and cries with him. What do you think is the meaning of Vayipol al tzavarav, that he fell on his neck? Let's say I skipped that phrase. I read the verse as follows. Esav ran towards him and embraced him. He kissed him and they wept. We have a hug. We have a kiss. We have tears. What's added by, and he fell on his neck? Let's take a look at this. Notice they embraced, unless that's just the way the Torah describes, you know, crying on someone's shoulder. But they embraced. He falls on his neck. He kisses him, and they cry. There's one other...
Falling on the neck reminds me of when Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, and then Yosef. And the two of them, they have falling on the neck.
Okay, if you look on the Hebrew side in verse Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, you see also a very important scriptural anomaly, which is all those dots on top of the word Vayishakeh, which are on top of the word, and he kissed him. So we'll point those out now. Chazal understand whenever you find those little hints, so to speak, in the Torah, and that's actually in a Sefer Torah, you would find dots put in there by the scribe on top of the letters Vayishakehu, always hints at something else, and we'll see Rashi will certainly quote some statements from the sages to that effect. Okay, but on a simple text, yeah?
Why the word before it has no vowels?
Okay, the word before it also is important. The word before it says... the first word on the line says Tzavarov,
right,
which would be a plural of their neck, or their on the two necks. And the way that it's actually spelled in the Torah is Tzavaro, his neck. So there is what's in the Torah known as a Kra, and a Ksiv, and a Kri. The way that it's written, and the way that it's actually pronounced. So the way that it's written says Tzavaro,
yeah, it says it, right?
Which is his neck. That's how it's actually written into the Chumash. It's pronounced Al Tzavarov. I'm not sure that exactly. We'll have to see if that's going to play itself out in some way. But there are two scriptural hints, so to speak, in this one pasuk. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayisos Einov. Again, that phrase. Vayisa Einov Vayar. But this time it's referring to Esav. And Esav lifts up his eyes and he saw Es Hanoshim V'Es Hayiladim. He saw the women and he saw the children. Vayomer mi eilelach. Who are these to you? Vayomar, and he said, Hayiladim asher chanon elokim es avdecha. These are the children with whom God has favored your servants. Questions, comments?
Well, when he asked the question, who are these to you? I thought he meant the women and the children, but the answer was only the children.
Excellent. So that's a very good, great point. In other words, it sounds like when, not sounds like, the Torah makes it very clear that when Esav lifts up his eyes, what he's seeing is both the women and the children. So that when he asks, who are these to you, it would seem pretty obvious that he's asking about both. And Yaakov only responds in regards to the children. The children are those with whom God has favored your servant. Excellent. And again, we see, how does Yaakov refer to himself in regards to Esav?
Your
servant, very clearly, which we had pointed out from the very beginning of our episode when he sends the angels to speak to Esav, he very frequently referred to himself as your servant. Okay, fine. So Esav lifts up his eyes. So we have this emotional meaning between Esav and Yaakov. They hug, they kiss, they embrace. Esav asks, who are all of these two? And Yaakov responds, the children are those that Hashem has blessed me with. Vatigashna hashvachos heino v'yaldehen vatishtachavena. The maidservants and their children who were first in line, they drew near and prostrated themselves before Esav. Let me just read one more verse and we'll see if there's any comments to say. Verse 7, Pasuk Zayin. Vatigashkan Leah v'yaldeha vatishtachavu. And then Leah and her children drew near and prostrated themselves. V'achar nigash Yosef v'rochel. And then after that, Yosef and Rachel came forward and they prostrated themselves. Okay, questions, comments on those two verses, 6 and 7.
So the question is, how did they even know to prostrate
themselves? Okay, so we're certainly not told about it, whether or not Yaakov told them and we just don't need to know about that, or they intuited that that would be appropriate because they saw Yaakov doing that when he approached. Fair question. But we're not told anything about that. Esav simply asks, who are these? Yaakov responds, these children are the ones that God has blessed me with. And then, either as if on cue, or Yaakov signaled to them, or they just intuited on their own, they come forward. Okay, fine. Anything else of note in verses 6 and 7? Okay, there's one important point that no one's gotten yet. To give you a hint, or you want to find it on your own?
Well, the only child is mentioned by name is Yosef.
Okay, Yosef is the only child mentioned by name, which is a great point. Now, all the other children are just clumped together as children. The children, which is what we saw in the earlier verse, in verse 2 as well, when they were divided up, it was maidservants and children, Leah and children, and Rachel with her Yosef. And here we see that again as well. Maidservants and children bow, Leah and children bow, and then Yosef specifically with Rachel come and bow. Excellent. The order is reversed when it comes to the last one. The women are always, the mothers are always listed first. In verse 6, the maidservants and their children came and bowed.
It was children of the maidservants.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Because I don't remember them.
That was verse 2.
And their children. Okay, right, you're right, right.
So in verse 6, so it's the maidservants first and then the children following the mothers. And then Leah first and her children following her. And then after that we find Yosef is first and Rachel after him. As if Yosef were trying, so to speak, either to protect or to put his mother even behind him. Now, he's the youngest of the litter.
How old is he at this time?
A couple of years. I don't know. He's, you know, the Torah doesn't tell us exactly how long. He's going to be 17 when we next find him, you know, after having his dreams in the next parsha. But that's already after the boys are, everybody settled in the land of Israel. So this is somewhere between, I don't know, 5 and 17. So he's not, I mean, he's, you know, max 15, 14. He's probably younger. Now we know that because Binyamin isn't even born yet.
Right.
So, I don't know, it's somewhere between 5 and 8. I don't think Binyamin was, you know, more than that. So he's the youngest out of everybody, and he goes before his mother. Everybody bows down. Continuing on, says Esav in verse 8, Pasuk Ches Vayomer, Milucha Kol HaMachane Hazeh, what is to you, literally would translate it as, what is to you all of this camp, Asher Pagashi, that I have met? So we put in the brackets there, like, what's the purpose of all of this camp that I have met? Now at this point, I'm not sure, does he mean the camp in front of you right now? What's the point of all of this with the maidservants and the children and everybody bowing down? Or what might he mean? The gifts that I've received already, which was quite a significant amount of gifts. Unclear just from the text what exactly he means. Milcha kol amachana hazeh. The language of hazeh, this, implies a little bit that he's referring to that which is in front of him right now. And that what he's talking about is, what's with all of these maidservants and the children and everybody coming and bowing down? What do we have all of this for? Vayomer, and Yaakov responds, Limsochein be'enei Adoni, it's all to find favor in my master's eyes. So again here, what do we see? We see Yaakov in the way that he refers to himself in regards to Esav's presence with that sign of humility, of subjugation, of you are really the master, you are really the strong one, and I did all of this really simply just to be able to find favor in your eyes. Any other comments, questions? No, good. Vayomer Esav, Yesh li rav achi, yehi lecha asher loch. Esav says, I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have remain yours. Okay, so first of all, what does this now tell us? What was he referring to in the previous pasuk?
Gifts.
All the gifts. Why did you send me all of these gifts? Why did you give me, which we went through, it was a pretty enormous amount of goods that Yaakov had sent in front of him, which he now describes explicitly to find favor in your eyes. Now, if you remember, let's go back just one verse for a second. Do you remember the opening line that Yaakov sent to his brother Esav? When he originally sent the angel without any gifts, he just sent the angels with a message. And he said, tell my brother, in Lavan Garti, I've dwelt with Lavan, ve'echar arat, and I've delayed until now, but now, and I'm sending this word to you, I'm telling you this to find favor in your eyes. And we saw the different commentaries. Some said, look, the brachas weren't fulfilled in me. That's why I'm telling you this to find favor in your eyes. I really never became anything. The wealth that I had wasn't your wealth. It wasn't from your blessings that I got the wealth. And if you remember, we saw the Maral said, I'm coming to find favor in your eyes. I'm telling you these things because that's what friends do. Friends talk to each other. They keep each other updated on their comings and their goings. So I'm telling you all these things just to find favor in your eyes. And that's why I'm letting you know that. So here too, again, Yaakov responds now directly to Esav. I sent all of those gifts to find favor in your eyes. And Esav responds here in verse 9, Pasuk Tes, Yesh li rav, I have much. I have a lot, my brother. Yehi lecha asher loch, let you have remain yours. Any comments, questions?
That's very nice of Esav.
Okay, number one is very nice. He says, I don't need it. You keep it.
And he calls him my brother.
Excellent, that's what I was waiting for. How has Yaakov identified himself every single communication between him and Esav? Your servant, my master. Whether or not he was sending the angels in the beginning, or whether or not he's sending his people with the gifts, and whether or not now he's addressing Esav. Each one of the three times that we have seen Yaakov address Esav, through the angel, through his party sending gifts, himself, always. my master, your servant Yaakov, you're my master. And Esav responds with that one word, Yesh li rav achi, my brother, I have plenty. Yehi lecha asher loch, let it be to you that which is yours. Keep it. Keep it for yourself. Vayomer Yaakov, Pasuk 10, verse Yud. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vayomer Yaakov, al no. Please no. Im no matasichein be'einecha. If indeed I have now found favor in your eyes, which is all that I want. V'lokachta min chasi miyadi. Then you shall take my gift from my hand. Ki al kein ra'isi fanecha. Kiros p'nei Elokim vatir tzeini. Because I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of an angel, and you have accepted me.
Isn't that going a little far?
What does that mean?
It's a lot of seeing.
A lot of seeing, excellent. A lot of seeing. Yaakov picks up his eyes and he sees Esav coming. Esav picks up his eyes and he sees Yaakov's wives and children. And Yaakov now says, I have seen your face. And it's like seeing the face. Now, the translation here is angel, but if you paid attention to the Hebrew, the word was Elohim. Was actually, a literal translation would have been, it was like seeing the face of God, Fatir Tzeni, and you have either been appeased or have accepted me. Comments, questions, other than like, wow, over the top kind of comment.
I wouldn't have thought that Esav really would could associate with or think much of angels or God or things like that.
So out of all things for Yaakov to say, seeing your face was like this, now seeing like the face of God is of no. But of course, what does it right away bring us back to?
The struggle.
The struggle he had in the previous verses. Right before this, he struggled with a man, which the Torah only calls a man, but the sages told us that it was the angel representing Esav. So it's certainly of note when you put the two together. And Yaakov sees Esav now for the first time in 20 years, and the first thing that he says to him is, gee, you look really like seeing the face of an angel or seeing the face of God. I just fought with a guy that looks just like you, you know, just before. But that's the way he says it. It definitely comes off as, you know, very strong, seeing your face, please. And also he's saying, and that's the reason he's saying why you need to take my gift. Seeing your face is like seeing the face of an angel, and therefore, you know, I beg you, implore you, please accept my gift. Kach noz birchasi, verse 11, pasuk yud aleph. Kach, yeah.
Does Esav know that Yaakov fought with his representative?
At this point, I would say no reason to assume that he knows that.
I mean, but throughout the whole story, does he ever?
I have no reason to ever assume that he was aware of that. Please now take of the gift which has been brought to you. Ki chanani Elokim, because God has favored me with all of these things. V'chiyesh li ko, and because I have everything. Vayiftzar bo, and he prevailed upon him, he continually pressed him. Vayikach, and he took it. Very interesting pasuk. Okay, comments, questions on this pasuk?
No, because I have everything. That's
that he gave credit to Hashem for.
Okay, excellent. Let's take one at a time. Number one, what does Yaakov say he has? He has everything. What did Esav say he has?
Plenty.
So I have to talk about that. That's the commentators have a field day with that. The difference between Esav saying, I have a lot, and Yaakov saying, I have everything. I have everything that I need. I have it all. It's not just a lot. We also see, as you pointed out, that Yaakov gives credit. Where did he get everything that he has from? Ki chanani Elokim. Because all God has found favor with me, and that's why I have all of these things. Now, the next point that I think we really need to discuss is only noticeable on the Hebrew side. This is where translations lose great amounts of value. In verses 10 and verses 11, Yaakov asks in both verses for Esav to accept his gift. If you were only reading in the Hebrew, you would say he asked him twice to take his gift. Excuse me, if you were only reading in the English, you would see that he asked him twice to take his gift. But if you read it in the original, you'll see that there's a nuanced difference. What does he call the gift in verse 10? Excellent. Minchasi. It's in the second line there in verse 10. If I have found favor in your eyes, v'lokachta minchasi miyodi. You will take my gift, my mincha, which is literally like an offering that it's the word we use to express the flower offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, a karban mincha. Take my mincha miyodi. Where are you going to take it from? From my hand. And then in verse 11 he says, kach no es birchasi. Asher huvas lach. Take my blessing that has been brought to you, because God has been gracious to me and given it to me. Think of the nuanced ways of expressing. The first one he says, take my mincha from my hand. And then he says, take my blessing that has been brought to you. Which one is more accurate?
The second one,
because where is the gift right now? In whose possession?
Well, it was sent to Esav.
It's in Esav's possession. Right? And as Yaakov sent that whole entourage of people carrying the gifts, Esav already has it. So the first time Yaakov speaks, he says, well, take my Esav now doesn't want it. He wants to give it back. Mm-hmm. Although the whole language that's being used here doesn't imply...
Why does he want to give it back?
He doesn't want it. We don't know why. Esa says in verse 9, Yesh li rav yihi lecha sher loch. I have plenty, let what you have remain yours. I don't want it. Yaakov says, no, please, if I've found favor in your eyes, accept my mincha from my hand. Because seeing you is like seeing the face of an angel, and I have been accepted by you. We'll have to really talk about that. And then he repeats, please take my bracha, which has already been brought to you, because God has been gracious with me, and I have everything. So in these two verses, we find very different ideas. A, if I were to ask a question, why does Yaakov argue that Esau should accept his gift? How would you answer that question? Well, not because he wants to find favor with him. In verse 10, why does Yaakov want him to take his gift?
Because he found favor in Esau's eyes.
Because I have seen your face, right, which is like seeing the face of an angel. You need to take my gift. Why in verse 11 does he say you need to take my gift?
Because he has everything.
Right? Because I have everything. God has blessed me and I have everything. So we'll see if we can come across some understanding as to what are the different meanings or messages of these two verses in which he switches from the word a mincha to a bracha. He switches from my hand to that has already been brought to you. He switches from because I have seen your face and it's like seeing an angel that I've been accepted by to God has blessed me and I have everything. Either way, Vayiftzarbo, he prevailed upon him, he continuously implored Esav, please take it, and he does. Vayikach. Now Vayikach, again, is a language which implies a physical taking, which is interesting because it would seem that Esav is already in possession of it, it's just a matter of whether or not he'll accept it. But the Torah uses that word, and I don't know that, right now I wouldn't think it means more than that, but that's the word of Vayikach, and he took it. Okay, that's, if we were to subdivide our second part of our episode into its own categories, I would end there. That's part one. Part one is the actual meeting and their first dialogue. And now we address part two, which is going to be Esav's request of Yaakov. They meet up, Esav runs, he hugs, he kisses, he falls on his neck, they cry. Esav says, what is all this? Yaakov says, I want to find favor in your eyes. Esau says, keep it, my brother, I have a lot. You keep what's yours. Yaakov says, I don't want it either. I want to find favor in your eyes. Seeing your face is like this angel. Take it, and Esau does. Now, part two begins in verse 12. Vayomer nisa v'neilecha ve'elcha l'negdecha. Esau says, travel with me. And we will go, and I will go alongside you. This verse is going to summarize, as we've been mentioning the whole way through, the sages see in this interaction between Yaakov and Esav a forerunner of what's going to be through our bitter exile. Following the dialogue about the gift, which we'll have to see if there's any allegoric meaning behind it, Esav now says, "Come, my brother. Come, let's travel together, and I will be alongside you." Yaakov responds, "Vayomer Elav Adoni, my master." So no matter how much Esav threw in, "my brother," Yaakov reverts back to, "my master." "Adoni Yodea, my master knows, ki hayuladim rakim, the children are tender, vahatzon vahabakar alos alai, the cattle, the flock, which are raising their young, depend on me, udfakum yom echad, if I push them even one day, vamesu kol hatzon, all of the flock will die." Yaakov says, "Esav, you have your 400 men, strapping young soldiers. I have young children and tender flock that are tending to their own young. If I push too fast, my flock will die. Can't keep up." Comments, questions? Yaakov again says, "I can't. We're too tender. We have to go slowly. Yavor no Adoni lefnei avdo. Now let my master go ahead before his servant." Again, Yaakov will not give up on the mode of addressing Esav. "Vani es nahalali iti, and I will move at my own slow pace. L'regel hamlocha asher lefonai, according to the pace of the work that is before me. L'regel hayiladim ad asher avo el Adoni Seir, and according to the pace of my children, until I come to my master to Seir." "I can't keep up with you," Yaakov says. "Let me, you go on ahead. I need to be driven by the pace of my flock, by the pace of my children. That's what's going to dictate for me the pace upon which I go. Until I come to my master to Seir, I'll meet up with you in Seir." Again, "my master." Every single reference, we see that consistently. "You go on to Seir, I'll get there. I'll meet you there. But I can't keep up with you, because if we travel together, I'm going to want to try. But if I push my flock too fast, they'll all die. I can't push my children either. And so I'm going to set my gait, I'm going to set my pace according to the slow needs of my children and according to the slow needs of my flock."
But you know, his record so far is not so good. Just because he's nice one time doesn't mean
100%. And Yaakov wants nothing to do with it. And all what I'm pointing out is that all Esav has showed to Yaakov is a run, an embrace, a hug, a kiss, cry. "I don't want your gifts. Keep them." Yaakov implores him. He says, "Fine, I'll take them. Hey, let's travel together." And Yaakov says, "Uh-uh. My gifts I'll give you. I want nothing to do with it." Esav goes further. Tezva, "Vayomer Esav, atziga noim chamin ha'am asher iti."
But in verse 14, you didn't ask if they were comments, Yaakov refers, "until I come to Seir." Now, I don't think we were told earlier that that's where Yaakov was headed toward.
Excellent. Okay, thank you for pointing that out. Whatever becomes of this statement, Yaakov says, "I'm going to come to Seir." So we'll have to see. The sages will talk about that. Well, was he lying? Was he just playing? What, does he ever get to Seir? Because that's not where he's going to get to when we continue in three more verses. Esav then says, "Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." "Fine. My camp travels faster. I'll give you one or two. They can handle it. They'll go slow. They'll bring a good book. They'll read along the way. Don't worry about them. But let me at least be with you. I'll have some representatives with you as you travel." Says Yaakov, Why do that? Emtzachein be'enei Adoni. May I find favor in my master's eyes. Again, my master, let me find favor in your eyes. Please, why? Don't even do that. I don't want to have your men travel with me. Vayoshav vayomahu Esav ledarko Seira. So Esav returned on that day to his way to Seir. Esav goes back. So this whole big meeting where Esav comes out with his 400 men ends peacefully. No confrontation. He accepts the gifts and he goes back and he accepts Yaakov's plea not to travel with him himself and not even to leave some of his men with him. Esav turns away and returns to Seir. The Yaakov nasa Sukkos, and Yaakov traveled to Sukkos. Vayivan lo bayis ulum, and he built for himself a house. Ulum miknehu asa Sukkos, and for his cattle he made these booths. Al kain kara shem hamakom Sukkos, and that's why they called the name of the place Sukkos. He got there, he made a house for himself, he made booths for his cattle, and they therefore called the name of the place Sukkos. Vayovo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov then came safely or whole, complete, to the city of Shechem, Asher Be'eretz Canaan Bevo'o Mipadan Aram, which is in the land of Canaan when he came from Padan Aram, which is where he had been with his uncle Lavan. Vayichon Es Penei Ha'ir, and he encamped before the city. So he spent, we don't know how much time he spent in Sukkos, but he gets to Sukkos, he builds himself a house there, he builds booths for his cattle, and then we're told he comes to the city of Shechem, which is already in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Shechem is significant. Anybody remember where Yosef and his brothers are going to be? The whole pit episode is going to be right outside the city of Shechem as well. That's where he went to find his brothers, and they went to Dothan, and that's where he follows them there. City of Shechem, from when he came from Padan Aram, and he encamped before the city. So he does not actually enter into the city of Shechem. And he bought the part of the field where he had pitched his tent from the sons of Chamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 kesitas. Who the Chamor and Shechem are going to come up again in the story of Dina. And Leah's daughters are going to be involved, but here we have them already introduced to us as the owners of the land outside of the city of Shechem. And Yaakov buys from them land. So when Yaakov has dealings with them later, after they abduct his daughter Dina, that was not the first time that they had met. They already meet here when Yaakov purchases some land where he had pitched his tent. Vayotzev Sham Mizbeach Vayikralo Kel Elokei Yisrael. He erects an altar and he names it God is the God of Israel. Kel Elokei Yisrael. All right. Yeah.
Yaakov went to Sukkot and built himself a house and so on. And then the next thing we know is he came to Shechem. There, I would assume there's quite a period of time there, you know, building a house and then
implies some type of permanence. You're going to be living there for a while.
Yeah, and then leaving it and it doesn't tell us anything.
Excellent.
Like
so let's put that in the bigger context of he builds a house and Sukkot. So which one's more permanent? The house, obviously. Which one's for him? Which one's for his cattle? So the house is for himself. The booths, the Torah says explicitly, are for his cattle. And what's the name of the place?
Sukkot.
Right. So we name the place after the booths that the animals are. Just a strange. So he builds the house for himself. He builds the booths for the animals, and he names the place Sukkot. And then, as Dean is pointing out, we don't know how long he's there. He was there long enough to build a house for himself, but we're not told how long. He then shows up in Shechem, which is in the land of Eretz Yisrael.
And he pitches a tent.
And he pitches a tent there. Excellent. He does not build a house. He pitches a tent for himself there.
And is he himself alone, or where's his rest? Okay.
All we know is what we're told. I think it's safe to assume he's with his family and his cattle and everything, but the Torah tells us he gets to Shechem, he pitches a tent over there.
Isn't he supposed to be going to his parents?
That we would have thought. It's unclear whether or not they're still alive at this point. He's been gone for some 20-odd years.
His purpose was to return.
And we are not told about anything about that, at least not at this point. We meet up with Chamor and Shechem again, who are going to come up later when they abduct his daughter, Dina, and his two sons are going to come and wipe out the whole city, but they already appear here as selling land that outside the city of Shechem. He erects an altar and names it God is the God of Israel. Okay, so we raised a lot of questions, and we'll start Mitzvah Shem next week. We'll go through with Rashi and the Ramban and Rav Hirsch, and we will learn what we can learn.
for those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.